And I'd like to introduce Dr. Michael Gorin, MD, PhD, who's a professor at Jules Stein and is an expert in genetics and in retinal disease. And he's going to talk about genetics of the eye, which is really important these days.
It's a real pleasure to get to talk to you today. I'm going to try to cover a lot of stuff. I don't want to be very technical. And my slides are not, I have a lot of stuff on my slides, but it's mainly what I say, because I realize that I'm talking to an audience where some of you may be visually impaired. What I want to do is sort of demystify some of this for you. And get away, and not use a lot of jargon in talking about genetics, but a lot of the things that I'm going to be talking about are applicable beyond the eye as well. We're reaching a point where in our work, we've made tremendous advances in ophthalmology and in genetics. By the way, I forgot on my first slide, I have a disclaimer there. When I was at University of Pittsburgh, there was a patent that I'm involved with, and it's being used for genetic testing. I'm not endorsing that testing anyway, you'll see. Ophthalmology has been actually a leader in genetics throughout the world. I don't know most of you aware of this, but the first genetic disease that was mapped in humans with markers was a cataract. Some of the greatest advances that have been made in genetics have been done in eye diseases because, well, to be honest with you, it doesn't kill you. Okay, so we have things like congenital cataracts, hereditary dystrophies, retinitis pigmentosa, some of you know about, genetic syndromes, Down syndrome, for example, and certain tumors. Those we all have known for a long time. We're now becoming much more aware of the value of doing genetics on these more common diseases like glaucoma, age-related macular degeneration, and myopia. And we're not at a point right now, this minute, where the genetics of age-related macular degeneration is going to transform your life. But I can assure you it will. It has been the most successful of all of the complex late-onset diseases that have been studied. Parkinson's, schizophrenia, Alzheimer's, all of those. Macular degeneration has been the greatest success story of modern genetics in terms of identifying genes that contribute to those conditions. And there are about 20 companies right now developing products to prevent the development or progression of macular degeneration based on those genetic results. So things are changing. Now, there are more subtle cases. We heard about cataract surgery a minute ago. You might wonder, why does somebody need cataracts when they're 60 years old and another person needs it when they're 85? Some of that may be environmental or diet or medication exposure, but some of it's also genetic as well. And things like diabetic retinopathy, we see some patients who have diabetes who really get through life great and have very little retinopathy, and others with more severe, and we're starting to understand the genetics of that as well. So, what's molecular ophthalmic genetics? My kids used to kid me when they used to refer to me as a molecular ophthalmic geneticist and ask me what sort of emergencies I was seeing that day. But basically, it's the identification of variations in specific genes that contribute to one's risk. Okay, so the simple example you would have is you'd have a gene which encodes genetic information like a recipe, and it's in every cell in your body, but not every cell uses it. Okay, it's like having a massive set of cookbooks, but if you're an Italian restaurant, you don't use the Chinese recipes. Okay, so it's used specific to the cells. A variation in that recipe causes it to not make the right product, leaves out something, or something's not correct, and you get a disease like retinitis pigmentosa. And the old dogma was, if you had it, this variant, you're going to get the disease. Okay, one gene, one disease. Okay, and an eye-specific disease was caused by an eye-specific gene. All of those are wrong in the sense that you can have a gene that's expressed throughout the entire body, but because the eye needs it in some very particular context, that if that gene is altered, the rest of the body can tolerate it, but the eye can't, or the retina can't, and you get a disease. So we have situations where you'll have a genetic condition, and not everybody in the family who has that altered gene will get the disease. It's not too common, but it does happen. Okay? You also have the situation where you can have multiple members of a family. They all have the same genetic condition. But, geez, Bobby has it really mild, but his younger sister is really blind. Why is that? Well, it's probably because other genes and variations are affecting that. But we see that kind of variable expressivity. There are also genetic variations that are affected by what you've done. So you can have two identical twins. One has the disease, one doesn't, because perhaps one was a smoker and smoking affected that disease. Okay? And then there's the fact that genes interact with each other. Okay? So just because you have a variation in one gene, another gene may in fact help compensate for it. And the other thing we've discovered is, again, you could have, I've seen this, where you have a family and one person has retinitis pigmentosa and another person has what appears to be a disease affecting just the central part of their vision, and yet it's the same mutation, okay? So phenotypes are how it manifests itself. So the dogma gets sort of softened. You can have a variant in a gene and it may or may not contribute to some degree to you getting this disease. So in a sense, what I'm trying to tell you is the game of life's not like tic-tac-toe. Have all of you played tic-tac-toe? You know, if you start off with the X in a particular box, it's sort of, you either are going to win or you're going to stalemate or lose. I mean, you're stuck. It's more like bridge. So for those of you who play that game, you know that, yeah, you can be dealt a really good hand or a bad hand, but how you play it and what's around you affects whether or not you're going to win. Okay, so within the complexity of the genome, and this is why I want you to get away from this fear about your own genetics. People get this sense of, if I knew everything that was wrong with my genes, I'd know what I'm going to have. I know what illness I'm going to have. I'm going to know how long I'm going to live. It doesn't work that way. Okay, there's so many things interacting and there's so much going on in your life that you're unique regardless. So remember, genetically identical twins are still different people. All right, so I want you to appreciate that distinction, because that's very important conceptually. We have technologies now where we can sequence all of your DNA. We can know every variation you have. In fact, I can tell you now that in this room, each one of you has about 2,500 variations in genes that are bad, that we know can cause disease. Why aren't you all dead? Because those are variations, for the most part, that occur in one copy of a gene, and you have two copies, and so you're being protected by the other copy. Now, that doesn't mean we're all defective human beings. That's the nature of life, okay? So we all have this kind of variation. So as clinicians, our objective is to use genetics to help patients and families maximize the quality of their life and minimize the impact of disease. I'm not going to cure you of your genetic alteration right now. Okay, but there's still a lot we can do. So what should your eye doctor do now? Well, they should take a history. Okay, they should be asking you what other family members have eye problems, and not just glasses. We want to know who's having whose vision is so affected that they can't drive or do things. How should genetics be part of your care? Well, the more you know of what your family history is, the more you know and realize that genetics plays a role in all of these diseases, you can more effectively adjust your lifestyle a bit. What do you need to know for the future? You need to know that the technology is changing, genetic testing is changing. There are situations now where we can do things more than before, and still be aware of the fact that, particularly in the United States, you have to be very careful of how your genetic information is being used. We have a Genetics Non-Discrimination Act. Let me tell you, it doesn't protect you very much. Okay, so before you go rushing off and having your kid tested for something, if they're perfectly asymptomatic and they're doing fine, make sure they have their disability, their life insurance, their long-term care insurance in place first. Because if you find that they have something that they're going to get in the future, you've basically removed their ability to get that coverage. Okay, so we have to be careful. What are your physician's obligations to you with respect to genetics? Well, they should talk to you about the extent to which they think that your personal genetics is affecting your risk for disease and what it's doing. They should talk to you a little bit about how that may be affecting family members. And they should talk to you about whether or not genetic testing will add to a better understanding of your condition and what role it should play with other family members. I'm going far too slowly. Okay. So it's important for you to recognize the genetic contributions to the disease you have. I happen to know of 10 different genetic conditions that I have from my parents, okay, at this point in time. I could probably get a few more squeaked out. But being a geneticist, I know all of them at this point, but a lot of them. And that's just from taking a careful family history and knowing what I have, okay? So take a real family history. It's actually kind of fun. Well, if you're on talking terms to people. And realize that in genetics of eye disease, we have to often look beyond just simply looking at the eyes. And I'll show you an example of that. And be selective in the use of tests. Don't just think that doing genetic testing is the answer. Not at this point. These are just some other conditions that are very common, which have genetic factors. So a person who comes in with a stroke in their eye, and they're 70 years old, we pretty much say, well, yeah, you're 70. You most likely you had some high blood pressure, you know, and some vascular disease, and you had a stroke in the eye, and that's what happens. But if you're 50, and you walk in with a stroke in your eye, now we got to think about why. Do you have a genetic risk factor that may contribute? And in that particular instance, knowing that fact may prevent you from getting a stroke that will make you paralyzed. So that's where genetic comes into play. Same thing with uveitis, inflammation in the eye. If we know that you have a genetic variant that puts you at high risk, we can look for the other factors. And in glaucoma as well, as I've talked about. So what do you do when the family history is imperfect or incomplete? Well, you do the best you can, basically. But it makes a huge difference. And let me show you an example. Here's a family tree. Now, boxes are men, circles are women. Black means the person has the disease. So we see that there's a woman at the top, and she and her husband had four children, and one of their daughters had the disease, and the daughter had a son. And now you see that there's another, a sister of that affected daughter, and she has a daughter and a son, and that son is affected. Well, what is this? Well, it could be dominant. That is, it takes only one altered copy of the gene and it's being passed down. So the... Do I have a pointer? Yeah. Wow. Hold on a second. Let's see if this will work. Yeah. So the altered gene is being passed to this person and somehow got passed to this person, but for some reason they didn't develop the disease and then they passed it down here. Now these are the two people in my office wondering what the heck is going to happen to them. But when you actually take a more careful history, what you figure out is that, first of all, there's no situation where it went from a man to a man. And the other thing is that when you actually ask, it turns out that the women weren't as badly affected as the men. Now, what you realize is that the women have an altered gene that they're passing on, but they're protected because women have two X chromosomes and men have one. And what that does is now we know for sure that this woman was a carrier, she was a carrier, he's affected. Men cannot pass that gene on to their children except as a carrier to their daughter. So we know that his daughter's a carrier and his son will never have the disease. So you see how by just doing the family history a little differently, we can tell you a great deal. Here's a case. This is a picture of a back of an eye. It happens to be a right eye. And you see these black pigment in the back of the eye. This represents areas where the retina is dying or dead. And it's from retinitis pigmentosa. Now, we see that it's a very common condition, one in about 3,000. But if you look beyond that and you look at this patient and you see toes like that, okay, you realize that this, see, you have to, the eye doctors even have to take off their socks. You might figure out that this is not simply retinitis pigmentosa, this is part of another condition. And this happens to be Refsum's disease, which is due to a metabolic disorder that we can treat. So we can prevent this person from going blind if we change their diet. So you can see how that makes a difference. Here's another example. This looks like a retinitis pigmentosa patient, except they have some central vision damage here too. Very advanced disease. But how many, I don't know how many you can see this, but the person has six toes. Okay? Now usually when they come into my office in the United States, the sixth toe has already been removed. But this is Bardet-Biedl syndrome, and we know of 13 different genes that can cause this. Now, you might say, well, what's the point? The person's still going blind. But we happen to know what kills them is kidney failure. And so we can put them on a diet that protects their kidneys, for example, and we can look for other problems that may be affecting them. Here's another patient who has, again, this could be a retinitis pigmentosa. They don't have the pigment, but they have lots of changes, and their retina is very similar. But in this case, the woman's eyes are not straight and her eyelids are drooping. And in this case, she has a mitochondrial disease. And so we know that this is a whole different thing. And her concern is that she's going to die of heart block. So we can now get a pacemaker put in and save her life. So you get the point, I think. Now, when we're dealing with genetic issues, we have to consider privacy, socioeconomic, and emotional issues. So when you're in the doctor's office and they're talking to you about genetic conditions, sometimes the patients won't ask the questions. sometimes relatives will do it for them, but sometimes they won't. Like, how do I believe my child when the doctor have found nothing? I see a lot of that, where the child will complain of vision problems and no one has seen anything. And it takes several years for us to see changes in the back of the eye that explain the condition. This is particularly true for a condition called Stargardt disease. You really have to pursue this and be patient. You don't want to see alienated families. You don't want your children to believe you don't believe in them, and yet you don't want the child to have something in the first place. So it helps to actually explicitly address the fact, how did you get this? One of the things of genetics that I tell patients, I said, here's the bad news. The bad news is you have this genetic disease. Okay? There's nothing you could do about it. Here's the good news. There's nothing you could do about it. Okay? You didn't cause it. All right? There's nothing that you could have done in the last number of years of your life to have changed whether you would have it or not. And for the most part, there's not a lot you can do that's going to modify it. So that's the good and the bad. Okay? A lot of people, if they have a genetic condition, are sort of told, oh, you know, well, you have this genetic condition. They think, oh, I'm going to pass this on to my children. Well, actually, that's not true. Since a lot of genetic diseases are actually caused by two altered genes, and you're only going to pass one of those copies, you may not have a significant risk of the child having that condition. They have to know more than that. And I have seen people whose lives have been ruined by doctors telling them, oh, you have a genetic condition, you shouldn't have children, when in fact, when we took a careful family history, we could show that in fact they would not have had affected children. And even if they would have had an affected child, is that the worst thing in the world? I mean, for a person not to be able to see, I know, is a terrible thing. But it's better that you're here, right? I mean, so it's a risk some people are willing to take, and it's not unreasonable. So anyway, we have to be sensitive to the guilt, anger, and depression of the patient as well as that of the family members. So if you're dealing with someone in your family, like you're dealing with keratoconus, and you're worried about passing it on to your children, or macular degeneration, or other conditions, you have to kind of come to grips with the fact that we all have passed genes on. Okay, I remember 2500 is where we started from. And then that's the way it goes. Okay, don't feel badly about it. You're passing on probably genes that make them handsome and smart and nice people as well. And maybe they'll have their hair. Who knows? So try to keep it in perspective, okay? I know, I'm running low. So we don't want to label people. That's not the purpose of making a genetic diagnosis. It's not to call you a retinitis pigmentosa patient or a Bardet beetle patient. It's to be able to recognize other things, like are you going to have renal failure? Are you going to have other things? So let me quickly go through a last few things. Genetic counseling is a non-directive approach. We're not telling you whether you should have family children or not. It's supposed to be empathetic, informative, and educational, and address various needs. And there are genetic counselors in the United States. As of this year, they've become licensed in the state of California. They still don't get paid worth anything, but they provide a valuable service that most doctors are not capable of doing. Should you do diagnostic testing when there's no treatment? You have retinitis pigmentosa. There's no treatment for it yet. There will be. Should I have genetic testing? Probably not, but it's useful for research, perhaps. I want to point out to you that you shouldn't have testing just for the heck of it, okay? There should be some understanding as to why you're doing it. Let me just quickly race through. In retinal degenerations, the list of the progress has been huge. If you look now, we know of over 150 different genes that we can test for retinal degenerations alone. If you take into account all eye-related conditions, it's even bigger. GeneTest.org is the biggest place where we look for testing. And as of April, genetic tests were available for 2,316 genetic disorders, of which about over 500 have eye manifestations. Okay, so we have lots of tests, but you don't need them all, okay, at any given time. I do want to point out that I just mentioned this slide in here, and you can read it. There's new technologies now that many of you have heard about where we can sequence your entire set of genetic information. Or we can sequence, this is called exomic, where we sequence only the part of the genetic information that makes the proteins that are the building blocks of your cells. And we can do this now. Exomic sequencing, I can do this for each of you for about $2,500. I can tell you all the variations inside your genes, the main genes, with this technique. It's not perfect. But we're starting to use this to discover genes and do genetic testing. And it raises some interesting questions because we find out so much information about you, we don't know what to do with it. Okay? So be aware of that fact. There are commercial companies that are starting to offer these things for you. So I think you have to be aware of the fact that there's lots of tests for really rare conditions. For the tests for macular degeneration and high blood pressure and glaucoma, those things, there are tests available, but they're not very good in terms of predictive value yet. Okay, so you have to be careful. And many of you are being marketed to, so I think you ought to be cautious before you do that, even though I do, my patent does get paid for by that. And again, while we're all trying to look into our future and see where we are, we're not there yet. Okay, so we've got things happening in the future in terms of the genetics research. I am concerned that research funding is really drying up. People have asked me, when am I going to have a cure with stem cell research or gene therapy for my condition? And I used to say, you know, we used to always tell patients 10 years. It actually is getting close to that, but I'm starting to get nervous with the funding dropping so low. So you need to be aware that we're not quite there yet. We are reaching a point where we can do more careful testing, and we will be developing these risk profiles. But I'm hoping that we don't start doing population-based screening. In other words, I don't want all of you to have to go to your doctor and be genetically tested if we don't have something to really offer you. And I think eventually we're going to see more and more genetic therapeutics where, I'm not talking about that today, but where we use your genetic information to really tailor-make the therapies that you need to maximize your vision. Thank you.
So I'd like you to stay up here, Dr. Gorin. Again, I'd love to have people ask, hopefully, general questions. Yes, ma'am. Nice and loud.
Do you know of any genetic markers that are in common between keratoconus and what form of that macular degeneration?
Good question.
Will you repeat it?
Yeah, okay. So the question was, do we know of any genetic markers, that is, variations in genes, that would contribute to the risk of having macular degeneration and keratoconus? First of all, let me say that, unfortunately, having one genetic disease does not protect you from having another. I've already told you that I have 10. Okay? So it's not unusual to find that person who has both. We know much more about the genetics of macular degeneration at the moment than keratoconus. But so far, based on what I know of the genetics of keratoconus, we've not found markers that correspond to those that are seen in macular degeneration. So we don't have that data.
My father has the macular degeneration, I have keratoconus.
They're probably unrelated. You're just lucky people.
And no one else in my family has anything worse than my own.
Well, the macular degeneration, the risk for macular degeneration is caused by variants in multiple genes. So that's why you will often find one person, and only 20% of macular degeneration patients will report a family history. And yet, what we have found is that those people who have no family history of macular degeneration have the same genetic risk factors as people who come from families with it. Any other questions?
Are there other questions? Well, Dr. Gorin, thank you very much, and Dr. Sahls.